Good morning. You're listening to Voices from the Prison Action Network, produced by Indie Media Radio. I'm Judith, and I've been producing Voices from the Prison Action Network for almost 2 years. Our intention from the beginning has been to provide an opportunity for people who normally do not have access to the media to speak their minds about issues of criminal justice. And for the most part, our listeners have heard the voices of those who have loved ones in prison, for they are the silent and invisible victims of crime, punished by both the prison system and by society at large for their association with a person who committed a crime. And we've also talked to people who've been in prison about the injustices they experienced while they were behind the bars. But today is our first time having a guest who's a victim of both. A victim of a crime by another person, and a victim of a justice system that has further harmed her and her children. Mary Richmond is the founder of the East Coast Protective Parents Movement, but I first heard of her from someone who wanted me to know about an upcoming event at Siena College, the Battered Mothers Custody Conference. So welcome to the program, Mary Richmond.
Good morning, Judith.
Why don't you start out by telling us about the event at Siena and how you got connected with it, and then about your own organization and the experiences that led you to both. And I'll just listen along with our listeners.
Thank you. Well, this year's the third annual Battered Mothers Custody Conference. It starts on Friday, January 6th, and runs through the 8th at Siena College in Loudonville, New York. And the person who is chairing this is a woman by the name of Dr. Mo Therese Hanna. And I was introduced to her via David Kaczynski, who's the executive director of the New Yorkers Against the Death Penalty. And he knew a little bit about our case that has been running now for 7.5 years through the family court and, through the New York State court system. The conference that Dr. Hanna has brought to this area, which is a national conference, looks at the issues of battered mothers and custody, because very much the level of justice is out of balance. When it comes to any type of parity, what happens is that women are at a disadvantage based on many different things, which primarily finances would be one part of it. But the reason for the conference is to help shine light on the fact that women aren't represented in any way equal.
How will the conference take place? Are there going to be keynote speakers and workshops, or?
Yes. The keynote speaker this year is a judge by the name of Saul Gothard. He's a retired justice of the LA Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And roughly about a month or so ago, there was a program that aired on PBS, which was produced by Dominique Lacier. Maybe pronunciating that incorrectly, but the program was entitled Breaking the Silence, Children's Stories, and it highlighted the fact that mothers who try to protect their children are often penalized by the court systems based on a thing that's junk science, and it's understood as being parent alienation. When a mother leaves with her children, what's often seen is that there needs to be decisions based on in the best interest of a child. And the court forgets the fact that the reason a mother leaves is to protect the child, not necessarily to alienate a parent. 75% of the cases that are in the court system are domestic violence, The most recent studies say that 1/3 of of U.S. women are victims of domestic violence. That's a large percentage. And when you consider that 75% of those that are in the court system are domestic violence, the other percentage are typically issues relating to mental illness and addictions. Most divorces that end amicably never come into the court system for any length of time at all. They're done through mediation. So when a judge is seeing this as a typical divorce, it's nothing like typical.
So what is Judge Gotthard unusually understanding of these issues?
He certainly is. He's also a social worker by practice and trade. So he has more of a universal look at what happens. Now, when it comes to domestic violence, the cases are treated based in civil rights, civil law, as opposed to human rights. So the burden of proof is typically on the victim. And when someone is coming out of trauma, they're less likely to sound as a professional. And most women, and I say women because it's more likely the percentage of women that are being battered by a man, part of human conditioning. There are some men that are battered by women, but the percentage is extremely small in comparison. Women are often, again, perpetrated with violence via the court system. It's a court system based, again, in power and control.
Why don't you tell us, you've been through this yourself.
I have.
Do you want to talk about your experiences at all?
Certainly. About 7.5 years ago, our daughter was just 2 and our son was about 3.5. I had made a phone call to a local women's service organization and asked if I needed a place to go, where would I go? And when I had explained that there had been a couple incidences where my husband had gotten, as I understood, angry and threw things and caused my son to have blood on his chin and had slammed, as he put it, our daughter into the crib when he was angry about her crawling across the books that he was reading, they hotlined it. This organization hotlined it, which meant that we were now in a system. I was told at that point I needed to go to a shelter. If I chose not to go to a shelter, that the children would be removed from me for failure to protect. So I made a decision to go to a shelter. When we went to the shelter, we then had to go apply for social services. I was considered homeless. We did own a home, but it was no longer considered mine in order to get reimbursement. So we were in the shelter. I wasn't able to retain an attorney because, of course, I only had about $3.28 in my pocket. I don't have a family that's supportive and understanding of my choices. So I didn't really have a place to go otherwise. And at that point, the judge had given us an order of protection and a stay-away order of protection from our children's dad. And I was appointed a court attorney who, at the time when we went in for the first hearing, didn't know my name. He had 17 file folders on his arm and basically didn't do a very good job. I'll just say my opinion. And by the time my husband's attorney had completed his display, it appeared as if I had caused all the damage. So I had hired an attorney with help from friends for $3,500 and was able to come into court the next time with some representation. But what I didn't quite understand is how expensive this whole venture could be. And roughly on an average, it's about $300 an hour for attorneys. And when you're spending a lot of that time sitting in a waiting area for your case to go on, that money doesn't last very long. Now, as I mentioned, this has been 7.5 years. During that time, we've not been out of any single court system for more than 2 months at a time. There was a point there where we were in 4 courts at the same time, which we were pending the divorce in Supreme Court. We had a criminal case pending in civil court. We were in family court and also in court for support. I've had multiple attorneys now. And during the process of that length of time, I had sole custody initially. It slowly unraveled to the point where now he has sole custody.
Can, Can I back up a minute? How long were you in the shelter, and did you ever get your own home again?
Good question. I was in the shelter for roughly about 2 weeks. The judge at the time was temporarily sitting the bench in the county that I reside, and he did something unprecedented. He allowed the children and I to return to the home and ordered their dad out of the home. Then at that point, my husband had determined he was going to stop paying for the mortgage. So within less than a year, our house went into foreclosure. And I was a stay-at-home mom at the time. I had two children under the age of four. So it would have been extremely difficult to pay for childcare and manage a mortgage.
Okay. So so then what?
So, as I said, up until that point, I didn't see myself in the early stages. I didn't see myself as a victim of domestic violence. When I went into the shelter, I had a tough time hearing them refer to my husband as a batterer because he didn't beat me. He didn't leave bloody or black eyes on me. But when I sat down with what's understood as a power and control wheel and looked at it with some suggestions of the folks that were offering me help through women's services, they told me to look at all of the issues that impact my life. And by the time I was done, I highlighted the entire chart. The only two things that weren't highlighted were hurting our family pet — we didn't own a pet — or him threatening to commit suicide. He didn't ever do that. But everything else was happening. So it was a rude awakening. I'd done many things in my life, so to change my paradigm and look at myself as a victim of domestic violence was far from what I could have ever conceived.
So you, after your house was foreclosed, where did you go to live? How did you find a place to live?
Well, I had spoken to some friends about, finally coming to the decision that I needed to find a place, and moved to a small neighborhood in Schenectady, New York, and rented a home there, and we're currently still there. But in this length of time, I have to say my landlords are beyond generous. At times I've not been able to pay rent, and I've gone for 9 months at a time where they've allowed me not to pay rent, which I'm absolutely honored that they would be able to do that. But I'm coming to a point now where I can't take advantage any longer of their generosity. Mm-hmm. And more recently, we're still in court. And I pay roughly about 48% of my income to him for child support. I've been asked by my landlords if there's a time soon where I may be able to continue to pay rent. And I wasn't certain that I could, so they're hoping that I could find another place to live.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to get right back to that, but I just want to remind our listeners that this is Voices from the Prison Action Network, and you've been listening to Mary Richmond, who's who's the founder of an organization. What's the name of your organization?
It's the Protective Parents Movement of the Capital District.
Okay. So I'm sorry to interrupt your story, but I want people to know who they're listening to.
Thank you.
So tell us, we've got maybe 10 minutes more. So if we could, I'd love to hear how this bring us up to date on your story.
Well, during the process of, understanding what domestic violence actually is, I've had an incredible education in family law. At one point, we had an attorney that was representing myself, and he wasn't able to attend court, so he had one of his cohorts represent me. And when I had explained that there's a history of domestic violence, he told me the following: what do you say to a woman with two black eyes? And I was taken aback that he would have the audacity. And he said, nothing. She's already been told twice. He was representing me. We've had a law guardian who, after an incident where my ex-husband had attempted to close the automatic window of the car on my neck with the children in the vehicle, refused to talk to the children. He's supposed to represent them. That case that I referred to was the criminal case, and that happened about 2 years after I had left my husband. That was dropped in court with an ACOD, a court pending dismissal. My husband is someone who presents well. He's a manager at the local newspaper, and he runs marathons for charity. We have an understanding of what bad looks like. Bad guys look like this, and you can paint the picture. And we also have an understanding of what healthy looks like when women that are going through domestic violence appear to be hysterical. It's because they might feel safe enough to be able to explain what's going on. And the men that's going through the other side of it can point and say, see why.
So what's the situation now? Where are you legally now?
So right now, what ended up happening is during the process of court, we had psychological evaluations done. There were three done by the same practitioner. And when you go to a forensic expert, they are the authority. The judge looks at them without question. This particular psychological evaluator used the same tool on me. It's a test of 750 questions. The first time he labeled me as being a borderline personality, which when you understand that, to say to someone, I'm not crazy, you appear more so. And the second time, given the same tool, he said that I had improved somewhat and that my husband seemed to be more guarded. I had, by the third time, sent a letter to the judge via my attorney that needed to be known that I have a learning disability. I have a difficult time decoding. And a test of this type of this type of test doesn't fare well for me with having this learning disability, but it also is known not to represent women who are victims of domestic violence. It's never been proven as a tool that's valid for that type of thing. After the third evaluation, he added on that I'm histrionic. He had the opportunity also to interview our children, and when he had asked our son if there was something you could change about your parents, what would it be? And our son said that he'd like me to cook better foods. I was vegetarian at the time. And then he also said he wanted his dad to stop hitting him on the back, neck, and shoulders. At the end of this evaluation and the report, this doctor had recommended that the children be awarded custody, sole custody, to the father. And that was determined in June of 2003. And primarily based on the fact that my ex-husband at that time had found a girlfriend who lived in a better area locally and in a school system that was top-notch. It's the best school system in the capital region. I live in a small city that offers city schools. So it actually flipped the entire thing upside down. During the time that this determination was being made, there was also another situation that had come up. We'd had roughly about 15 child abuse reports during that time that were against him. One of them being when our daughter had said at one juncture that her father had been showering with them. When I mentioned that to the pediatrician, she hotlined it. And an investigation started, and because there was no actual physical touch, it was seen as unfounded. Whenever there's an indication of any type of sexual misconduct, the custody is almost always awarded to the father. I believe it's two-thirds of cases where there's any type of sexual misconduct happens with domestic violence cases. So,
That didn't make any sense to me.
Okay.
What he's the one who's inappropriate with the children, and he gets awarded it. And that's
what's often seen is that the woman has an axe to grind, that she's doing this as a last stop to fight. I don't know that there's any person alive that wants to understand that their child has been violated. And the evening that this happened, my daughter and I were sitting draining the tub after my son had had his bath. And my daughter had said something to the effect that whenever she takes a shower with her dad, the water drips off his penis and it looks like he's peeing. And I had asked her, when was the last time you had a shower with your dad? And she said, this morning. And I didn't want to react. I wanted to respond. So I waited and I asked her later, doesn't he not realize how independent you are? And she goes, well, it's okay. Well, I'd rather shower with his girlfriend. And then later learned that my son had also been showering with them. My daughter was 6 at the time. My son was close to 8. They're not ages where children need assistance in hygiene.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we only have a few more minutes. So you're living through what sounds to me like a nightmare. How are you coping, and what are you doing to go on?
Well, I have a tremendous support network. I do a great deal of public speaking. I'm on the mayor's task force in my city. I'm on the Alternatives to Violence task force as well. I help educate people that are in the professions of the medical profession and in addictions. It's not relating to addiction. It's a belief system. It's not a disease. And I do as much as I can to inform other women that have gone through this that they're not alone. The system's set up to ensure that women feel as if it's just them. And by producing this Protective Parents movement, I'm hoping that we can hold batterers accountable and judges and the people that are in the positions of making real difference.
Is there anything that our listeners could do to be supportive to this movement if they've been moved by everything they've heard this morning?
Well, on January 6th at noon, we're going to be having a protest rally in New York, in Albany, New York, at the state capitol. There's a park, Liberty Park, across from City Hall. And we want to raise awareness about the issues and how common it is. A lot of the women that I've met are people that you pass every single day that you might believe have it all together. They don't look like what we would understand a victim looks like.
Mm-hmm. You certainly don't.
Well, thank you.
So tell us again, what time and day?
January 6th. I'm sorry.
And
January,
what day of the week is that?
It's a Friday. It's actually a week from this Friday, January 6th, 2006, at 12 noon until 1:30 at the New York State Capitol, Liberty Park, directly across the street from City Hall.
Right. Okay. So what do you think? We only have a couple of minutes, but now I want you to tell us, what is at the root of this problem? What's the main issue here that needs to be addressed in order to change this story?
Well, one of the things that was proposed to me not long ago was that there should be shelters for batterers, that if we were to hold batterers accountable and protect women and children, then we might be able to look at this from a different perspective. Victims don't choose to be victimized. And we often look at battered women and say, why do they stay? Which is holding them responsible for someone else's actions. What we really need to look at is, why do batterers batter? Why do men typically treat women this way, women and children this way? And why is it that the system won't allow women to protect themselves and their children? Women don't go to court asking the courts to protect them. They ask the courts to help them protect themselves. Most women know the safest route, and that's why some women do stay. It's a little bit easier to know what to expect next if you know where it's going to come from.
That's a tough choice. I had another question. Are there any laws that could use changing in order to? I mean, is it a problem of the laws, or is it a problem of how the law is applied?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think what often happens is when police are called in, most of the things that are happening don't rise to the level of a crime, and there's not enough teeth in it so that when it's presented through the court system, it's often bargained down. We treat it as a civil rights issue, as I mentioned earlier. It's not based in human rights. And when it comes to domestic violence, it's much different than something that has to do with stranger violence. There's multiple events. It occurs over time. It's never random. Often there are children involved, so it continues for years.
I'm sorry, but we're going to have to wrap it up right now. Do you have any contact information that you'd like to give out before we say goodbye?
Yes. If anyone's interested in the Battered Women's Abused Children and Child Custody Conference at Siena College, it's going on the 6th, 7th, and 8th of January at Siena College. And the contact person there is Dr. Mo Therese Hanna. The number would be 518-210-2487. And the Protective Parents Movement March on Albany is January 6th, 12 noon to 1:30 at the New York State Capitol.
Well, thank you very much for being with us, and good luck.
Thank you.
Keep in touch. Maybe we can have you back and bring some good news at some point.
Terrific. Thanks so much, Judith.
You're welcome.